That was way too nice. I wrote him a whole book, but he wouldn't read the whole thing. So lucky for you. Pleasure to be here today. I came to my first one of these in the early 1980s, so don't really want to remind myself of that too much, but it's definitely a pleasure to be here today. Our center actually began as a Western States effort in 1955. We're designed to be behind the scenes. Some of you that know me know why that's the case, because usually when they let me out, you all will understand this, usually when they let me out to do these kinds of things, somebody has to go out and do some fence mending afterwards, and none of us cowboys really like to do much fence mending, so it's usually a big pain in the butt. But so we work in all those states, work for six or seven USDA agencies. Not all of them pay their bills. We're not USDA employees. And then the major livestock commodity groups, but we're designed to be behind the scenes. So I'm going to talk a little bit. You put a bunch of economists on the program, and they're all going to talk about the same thing. Apparently, we don't read what each other's topics are. So I just put up the same topics as the prior two speakers, and we'll go through those. Down at the bottom, I want you to think just a little bit. Pretend you're a corn grower sitting out in the country. And if you didn't have these USDA types of information, like the mid-year cattle inventory this last summer, in the middle of a drought, coming out of a drought, we don't know how many cattle are in the U.S., what the size of the calf crop is, what feeder cattle supplies outside of feedlots are. Those of you that are smaller producers, think about that. If you were a corn grower and you didn't have this information, who would have it? And I would say it would be ABC, Archer's Daniel Midland, B would be Bunge, and C would be Cargill. So something to think about. All the forecasts are from our shop. Let's talk about the macroeconomy. Well, the point of this slide is, you probably can't see from the back of the room, is that it is these developing countries. The developed world is very slow growing worldwide. You all know that. And the dynamics of that have changed dramatically. And that drives, and we're going to really frame the economics of the cow-calf sector. And certainly that international component is key in that growth rate. And we can see that we're driving world growth rate by India, China, and the developing world as opposed to the developed world. Okay, let's talk about the U.S. economy. Don't worry about the scale up there on the edge of that. That's quarterly change in GDP annualized. We have those big red bars. That's the economic recession we went through, began in 2008. Those little bars off there further to the right is the prior economic recession. We're at a very slow growth rate in the U.S. economy. We can talk about that some more. The facts are that we take per capita disposable income, and it's a derived number, the blue line, and we adjust for inflation. The average U.S. consumer today is, on a real income basis, poorer than they were in 2008. The average U.S. consumer today is poorer than they were in 2008 in real spendable dollars. So that's a concern for the beef industry, and that's part of the backdrop that the cow-calf producer is producing in, right? You're producing in this segment that eventually ends up at that level. So let's talk about demand. Well, to an economist, demand is a very complicated thing, and we run around and we can't even explain it to each other, kind of like maybe beta agonists. Demand has two dimensions. It has a quantity dimension. Greg mentioned, you know, per capita consumption. And that's declining in the U.S. The other dimension of demand, and they're both together in the textbook, it's a curve, is the price that the consumer is willing to pay. Okay, so we put those two together, not only the consumption but the price. And if the consumer is willing to pay a relatively record high price for beef like they are today, demand can actually increase and per capita consumption declines. Demand can actually increase and per capita consumption decline. There's a lot of misinformation in this industry that per capita consumption is declining, therefore checkoffs don't work, therefore nothing works, therefore the world is going to heck in a handbasket. It's not true because these prices are record high. So we make an index out of demand, and we can see that third quarter to third quarter, looking across that, the demand is actually improved for beef, the final ending product to consumers, the best we can measure it the last several years. And it really has tracked the U.S. economy. As the U.S. economy has moved, this demand profile for beef has actually improved, okay, even though per capita consumption has declined. The pork and the chicken industry cannot say that. You watch the pork. I work for the pork industry, too. Every time they get a month, your industry, demand is actually improving. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what Greg talked about there for a minute. Why would I put up unemployment rate in the United States? Because in the context of what's going to drive profitability, this drives interest rates. The Federal Reserve has very much said, as unemployment rates come down, we're going to start changing quantitative easing, which is buying these long-term bonds, and step back from that. And we've sent the stock market into gyrations a couple months ago over this story. And they're probably going to step back again and say, you know what, unemployment has to come down even more before we start taking the goodies off the table. But when they do, they're only going to really impact the longer-term rates, and they're going to try to keep short-term rates down. Now, the consensus is out in the industry that as soon as this happens, we're headed for skyrocketing interest rates. And the reality is we're headed for higher interest rates, but the Fed sort of bounds interest rates, but they can't really overcome what the economy's doing. The bottom line is we haven't had much inflation in this economy or running, this economy's not growing. So the Fed can push things within the economic reality, but if you don't have demand out there, you're not going to have much higher interest rates. So interest rates are going higher. They're going to start taking the long term off the table, but it's a gradual interest rate increase. It's not a skyrocketing phenomena because the Fed has to operate within, they really are following the economy. The Fed policy now is let the economy decide interest rates and we'll follow suit. So that's the reality. You're going to pay higher interest rates. It's going to be a slow process. You're going to start to see 30-year rates and 10-year rates are already up. But short-term operating money is going to stick probably in these lower rates for quite a while. It's not the 1980s all over again. It's not the 1980s all over again. It's not Mr. Carter all over again. It's not stagflation all over again. This is a different time, and we're not necessarily going back to that time. Let's talk about the grain market for a minute. We don't need to talk about drought to this audience. That lower picture there is DGGs. Corn prices are down. You all know that. That's the blue line. Dotted lines last year. Red line's prior five-year average. Corn prices are down. The red line is what we had a year ago, what we'll have for this current crop here, and what we're projecting for next year. The 2014 corn that's not in the ground yet. 2 points of this graph. Corn prices are down. Whoopee. Corn prices are not to where they were several years ago. And they're not going to $2 a bushel. The ethanol boom is over. Ethanol is no longer going to be a driving force kicking around supply and demand relationships that you all have to deal with on your cost of production. It's a mature industry. I think the political story's already been told. It's not a growing industry. It's going to ramp up to its capacity. But it's no longer going to be a shock in the marketplace. Now, if we have a drought, it can be, but it's no longer this government-driven mandate that causes your feedstuff costs to be highly volatile. It's a different environment here on the grain side, okay? Much different on your cost of production, especially for feedstuffs. When was the last time we talked about year-to-year significant declines in the cost to purchase feedstuffs? It's been a long time. We're headed for that era. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about cattle. Anybody want to talk about cattle? Let's do that for a minute here. This is the cattle inventory by state on January 1. First of all, note the heart of the country. Up and down the spine of the country are the million head states of beef cows. Look at the million head states. And last year, we ended up with 92.3 million head of beef cows. And next year, we're going to have less beef cows, but it's still going to round to 92 million head. I get calls all the time from reporters, when are we going to run out of cattle in Texas? We ain't going to run out of cattle. Are we a declining herd? Yes. We're still 92 million head. We produce more beef than any country in the world with less cattle. Now let's talk about the change year to year. We lost about nearly 900,000 head of beef cows last year. The drought drove that. Northern tier states, not so much. All well and good. You all understand that story. Let's look at the 10-year story. 10-year story is a little bit more dramatic, and let's paint this picture a little more detail. Let's just pick on three regions of the country. First, let's pick on Southern California. California is a cow state. Southern California's beef cow herd is dependent on irrigated pasture. Irrigated pasture, they're still ripping that out and planting it to vines and orchards. An irrigated pasture-based cow-calf sector is really hard to maintain when you don't have water. So that part of the U.S. is going to struggle to rebuild the cow herd because they're transitioning acres still out of irrigated pasture. Now let's switch our attention to a state like Texas. What's gone on in Texas in recent years? Well, they've had a heck of a drought. But the policy change about 3 or 4 years ago was, with the blessing of the cow-calf sector, they changed their land policy such that you can, it used to be you had to have agricultural production to have your lower ag value assessment, so you paid lower property taxes. So a bunch of people had a few cows to keep down their property taxes. They changed the law a few years ago, and now you can raise wildlife and have your tax property taxes reduced to an ag valuation. So you don't have to rebuild the cow herd. And a bunch of Texas is not going to rebuild the cow herd because they don't have to do that to get their property taxes reduced by a huge amount, just like in Nebraska and most states where you have an ag valuation. Let's look at the northeastern states. Well, we've had some increase up there in the 10-year time frame. Why is that? Because the dairy industry shrunk. Dairy industry in the United States, fluid milk demand is declining precipitously, and the parts of the U.S. industry that survive produce yogurt and cheese, and many of them have transitioned to that industry. We look at much of the Midwest, and that cropland is, you know, that pasture and range and forage land has gone to crop production. So even as we start rebuilding the herd, big parts of the U.S. are sort of going to be constrained. It's going to be a slow growth process for those outside economic issues. Let's talk about cattle cycles. Cattle cycles go up and down. The red line is the prior cattle cycle. Blue line is this cattle cycle. They run about 10 years, plus or minus. Why is that? They run about 10 years, plus or minus, because that's about how long a cow lasts. You do all this sophisticated economics, and it comes down to when you start to kick off a cycle, there's a cow herd influx that happens, and guess how long cows last drives the length of a cycle. But the ups and downs of a cycle have greatly changed, and they ain't going back to the old days where you can sit back in cow-calf country and try to figure out where the cattle cycle is and figure out how you want to make your management plan. We don't operate that way anymore. It's no longer, still a cyclical industry, but nothing like what it used to be in terms of the ups and downs. But the length of cycles, even though they've been very weird lately, fundamentally ties to how long cows stay in the herd, and you all understand that. And we get lots of questions. This is the same dotted line up here, and the red line is beef production. Cattle inventory goes down, and beef production doesn't go down. Why is that? Because of genetics. And if I wasn't and not in a mixed audience, some of you know what my answer is. That is incorrect. The last 2 years, why hasn't beef production gone down? The driving factor is we killed a bunch of cows. It's cow beef production, not only steer and heifer beef production, that drive the system. And the cow beef production is going to decline precipitously, and the steer and heifer production. So all of a sudden, it's been masked by cow kill. It's a very simple story, but it's greatly overlooked. So this thing's going to come down dramatically the next 2 years. We're going to take cows out of the slaughter mix. We're already doing that. We're going to take steers and heifers because you have smaller calf crops. We're going to import less Mexican feeder cattle. All those come together very quickly. So let's talk about where the inventory is headed. Well, the dotted line there on the top is our biggest estimate for the cow herd, and the bottom line is our smallest estimate. Our biggest estimate is a year-to-year decline on January 1, 2014. I'm an economist by training. It's hard for me to say this. Almost unequivocally, I can't say unequivocally. They don't train us to say that word. Almost unequivocally, we're going to have a cow herd decline on January 1, 14. Okay? No ifs, ands, or buts. And the rate of growth is going to be pretty modest due to some of those factors we just described, along with the conservative nature of producers. So we're ahead. We're looking at 2017 before we get a significant increase in U.S. beef output. Could be longer. But beef production is going to go down. The brown bars are 2014. Those are our forecasts. But the question is how much beef production is going to go down. Not that if it's going to go down. It's going down a bunch. Now let's look at total red meat and poultry production. It ain't going down. But it ain't going up a lot. And the key driver is whether how well we survive this is Greg's point. It's the export markets. How much of the pork and chicken gets exported and can go overseas, and how much beef goes overseas at what price point. We're ramping up the pork industry, but they have a little problem called porcine epidemic diarrhea. It's really holding them back in the industry. Once they solve it, they're going to have a lot of pork in the system. Chicken industry, the same, ramping up. The point is that beef at the highest price point, you have to maintain quality and compete for that consumer. the growth rate of the U.S. economy and the growth rate of exports become the driver. So economic growth tells us we can raise beef prices even higher, but without economic growth, we can't do that. They'll switch to pork and chicken. They haven't done that yet. We keep saying every quarter, every year, the economists say, next year we're going to see more substitution to pork and chicken, and we have not seen it yet. Depends on the growth rate of the U.S. economy. Let's talk about this. The blue line is the cattle inventory. The red the bars are our estimates of cow-calf profitability. So 2013 there, we're looking at a pretty profitable year. We know costs have gone up, and these are net. This includes pasture rent. And you can see that these are overlaid, right? As the cattle numbers go up and down, we tend to push cow-calf cash returns up with lower numbers and down with higher numbers. That's the reality. But that's a pretty profitable picture looking ahead. We'll come back to that. So the inventory is important, not as important as it used to be, but we still got to keep it in the back of our mind. So let's talk about where we think prices are headed. Well, the blue line is calf prices. A couple points here. This is not that earlier hump in this deal here, okay? There it is. This is the great fake out back in that cattle cycle where we got a bounce up and then we had a crash in the market. This is a pretty strong uptrend that we're still in. We're going to run out of steam, but it ain't there yet. Second point to notice is the green line is not going up as fast as it was. The Fed cattle price trajectory is tampering. I just made that word up. It's not going up as steep as it was because we're running into more and more headwind from pork and chicken. But it doesn't mean it's going down. I mean, people will tell you out in the country, well, people are going to eat more pork and chicken. Yes, they are. But it does not trade one for one. Consumer does not decrease beef consumption by a pound and then increase by the same amount of pork and chicken. They don't do that. They don't do that here. They don't do that in any other country. Okay? You have a premium product if you keep producing it. So that's the trajectory of prices, pretty darn high. Slaughter cow prices even higher. I mean, what's a cull cow worth today? 4 months from now, they'll be 90 cents a pound again. Next year, they'll probably be $1 a pound. A 1,300-pound cow is $1,300. You know, put that into your budget. Salvage value of a cow, at least $1,000. $300 per year return over cash cost. You can pay a lot for an animal if you don't screw it up. So let's talk about the cost side. These are our estimates. These don't fit any of you. But we talked for years in this industry about, and in recent years, $550, $500 cash costs, kind of out-of-pocket costs, including interest costs, to run an operation. Last year, our estimate was $800 a cow. A lot of purchased feed stuff. This is no longer a cheap game to play. This is a business. It always has been a business, but it's a whole lot more of a business. You're talking about $800 a cow cash costs, and you haven't put anything back to get the kids into college. Now, cash costs are going to come down this next year. We know feedstuffs are going to come down. Okay? Hay's not going to come down a lot till the year after. Probably even energy costs could come down here a little bit. Okay? Doesn't happen that often. It's not going to come down to $400. It's not coming down to $500. It's not coming down to $600. It's coming down to about $700 to $750. Still a lot of money. It takes more capital than ever to play this game. And to play it successfully, you got to manage that. So here's, look at that bar on the right. That's why I didn't write a damn paper. Those cow-calf returns are off the chart. I don't even believe the number, and it's my number. These guys over here listening, you people are asleep over here. How much can you afford to buy a heifer if you buy it? The point of windows of opportunity don't come very often in this industry, and you need to understand the scale and the magnitude of potential returns over. I know it takes more money than ever to be in the business. And the headwind is, you know, cattle feeders finally made money for a couple months, and now the dotted line, they bid that away already. So let's talk about this a little bit. Am I out of time yet? Dr. Paisley, you were supposed to cooperate and say yes. Okay, let's talk about the economic environment in a summary context. Let's make a few points here. Okay, we're done. So The problem is that there's this, the recording in the back of the room, so I can't tell any stories. And in the, I can't see the screen because the lights are in my face, so I don't even know what the screen says there. So the bottom line is consumer demand is pretty darn good and surprisingly good in the beef complex. If you produce quality, the consumer will pay for it. You don't want to not produce quality. You know, demand overseas is kind of shaky, actually, except for Japan, but there's still a lot of potential, and this is truly part of the foundation of the industry. 20 years ago, 15 years ago, when I talked at meetings like this, I talked about export markets, da-da-da, looked really good on graphs. It did not move prices. Today it moves prices. There's still going to be shocks in the system. We have ethanol. We have globalization. What happens when you globalize in an economic context? What do you have to prepare for in cow-calf country? When you globalize an economy, you tend to get a higher trajectory of prices and more volatile prices. We've had plenty of volatility thanks to ethanol, but the Russians and all these political things that Greg talked about, they tend to stab you in the back. You're going to get on the higher price trajectory, but you've got to be able to withstand the ups and downs that also come with that, and that's what you have to prepare. We're still going to have shocks like BSE. You know, we already talked, pork and chicken are ramping up, beef's going down. You know, even with corn lower today, the forage on your ranch has never been more valuable than it is today. So what do you do on your ranch? Well, if you're going to get rid of invasive species or increase stocking rates or do cross-fencing, all those things are now much more economically important than they ever have been. When I was at the University of Nebraska in the 1980s through early 1990s, I did a lot of range management economics. And I usually lied to people and said, you know, and you can pay for this cross-fencing with this magical increase in performance. Today, you can pay for a lot of that stuff, and you're going to have to do it. Because pasture rents aren't going down, probably not much, and the cost of grassland is not going down. Mistakes are really costly. You've got to be able to deal with those. Let's talk a little bit about the bottom line here. Let's do a big picture story. In the packing sector, how have they stayed in business in recent years? They've tended to reach beyond in their processing system. In other words, today Tyson cooks beef. And the way they make money is not the old day of selling wholesale beef, but they've gone beyond that. They haven't really reached back much further into the cattle feeding sector. They sort of learned that lesson a few times, Mr. Monford, et cetera. Now let's switch gears to the cattle feeder. How has the cattle feeder survived recently? Not very well. But those that have are not the same cattle feeders they were 10 years ago. This is not the same cattle feeding game. It has a direct impact on you because you're cow-calf producers and those are your clients. Those are the people that are buying your animals. We need to look over our shoulder at that sector right now and for the next 4 or 5 years and watch how that unfolds because it's going to drive the economics at the cow-calf sector directly. So let's talk about a couple aspects there. First of all, technology, looking over our shoulder. We have the potential here in the next few years to do quality grading, in other words, tenderness grading, beyond quality grading, using the camera grading systems we have. If you can get to tenderness objective scores, like we have quality grade objective scores in the meat industry, changes the profile for everybody playing this game. Not sure it's going to happen, but I probably will. Beta agonists, we can talk about that. Let's talk about animal ID and management. How do the top southern plains, I'm not going to pick on Nebraska this time, how do the top southern plains feedlots manage today? It's really no longer a custom feeding world. It's a world of sorting animals and targeting animals and segmenting markets so that they're real. You know, you sort animals 4 or 5 times, you take an ear notch out of the ear for a DNA test, and then you manage your beta agonist program. This isn't the same old game. They're making some money in new ways. And how's the other way they've made money? Well, you've seen it. They're reaching back like the packer has reached to the meat side of the industry. The feedlots have reached back to the cow-calf side of the industry like never before. And if you larger ranchers already get those phone calls, right? They're trying to capture the animals earlier. Now, they've been trying to cheapen up on grass and wheat pasture for a couple years. That hasn't worked. But if they continue to have the capital to play this game, they're going to continue to reach back and try to control those calves earlier and earlier in the process. That's the nature of the game. If you don't know your cost of production and you don't understand how they're playing the game, you're going to miss out and you're not going to see how that's unfolding. And why do they do that? Well, let's talk about video auctions. Video auctions, what do? You put them on the video auction, and the next thing, what happens? They look in their database at their computer system, and they know how your cattle performed. And if they don't like how your cattle performed, they're not going to bid, and they're going to X them right out of the catalog and not bid for your animals. If you think you're going to the auction barn today and selling your calves anonymously, you're wrong. Small feedlots, 5,000 head one-time capacity, have database management systems that would put mine at the LMIC to shame. What do they do on the video auctions? They code the rep on the video auction into their database, and they bid higher for the best reps on the video auction. That's how it works today. So if you don't know how your cattle perform, it's going to be harder to know. If you don't know how the cattle feeding sector works, it's going to be harder to participate. And you're going to get bids for your animals, and you better know what your cost of production is, or you don't know how to price them, because this pricing mechanism in the whole industry is changing right in front of our eyes. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Pleasure to be here today. Thanks very much for the opportunity.